Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane and I believe that trusting your intuition is the best way to live your life with meaning and purpose. Each week you will hear about how you can connect, develop and trust your intuition. Through the wonderful array of guests we have on the show and my own personal experiences. Join me to understand how your intuition can guide you towards a life full of meaning and loving purpose. Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane and I'm your host for the podcast. Now, today we are talking about our minds, our little noises that happen, our thought patterns that go on, our feelings, our voices that we get and that come through. And I'm really excited about this because we're going to be talking to a young man, and he is a young man. We're all young at heart. A young man who has a very clear understanding of the differences, the voice in the mind, the voice in the heart, and how we can get rid of some of that chatter. Now, I know that to connect with your intuition, you need to be mindful of what is chatter, what is the good voices, what are you listening to, what are you taking on board. So it's really, really important to advance by knowing that. So I'm going to have Troy come on the show. Welcome to the show, Troy.
Hey, Sujan, thanks for having me. And I am a young man by any means. I'm a young man in spirit and age.
That's exactly how I felt. I thought that you are a young man. Maybe I just feel really old lately.
I have been younger, but I'm still young.
Young at heart, definitely. And then besides that, you know, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up yet. So obviously, I haven't grown up.
There's so much potential. I grew up.
So we're going to be talking about those inner voices that we have. Now, I know a lot of people do struggle with this, and even sometimes I do. We'd be going through, you know, the emotions and going through things that are happening in our lives, and you might have this voice saying, oh, try doing this, and somebody else will go, oh, try doing that, and you do start to get very confused. So we want to get a good understanding of that. But before we start, Troy, I want to know a little bit more about you. I know we had a little quick chat when we first came on, but I don't know anything about you. And if the people are listening on the audio, they're going to enjoy that accent too. So tell us a little bit about you, Troy.
Yeah, I was born in Trinidad, and I've spent most of my life in Trinidad, other than traveling and so on. But my mom's ancestry is Irish, and my dad's family's Syrian, Middle Eastern. And I spent the majority of my life here. I went to university in Florida and Tampa, and I've done quite a bit of traveling. But I have been teaching and practicing yoga for over 15 years. I just finished writing my first book. I have run a hemp store, all natural clothing store. I've founded a recycling business, which I then sold. And I've been running a yoga studio and community in Trinidad probably for about over 10 years now. And traveling and teaching as a yoga instructor, you would say, but I don't really believe in these labels of putting myself into boxes. So when someone asks, well, what do I do? Because I'm now also doing keynotes and public speaking. I would just always say that, you know, whatever I do, I want to know that I am helping people connect to their understanding of God. And helping us all understand and remember what it means to love one another. And that's a box that I would put myself in. And whatever I do within that box, it can look like anything.
Absolutely. I love that, because too often we need to define ourselves by what we do or who we feel we are. But it's not like that. But in saying that, yoga has such a beautiful aspect to it, especially when we're starting to connect with that inner self, our God, whatever we want to call the terminology. But yoga has such a big role to play in that, and it is so important. But yeah, I like that you don't want to be in a box, because I remember when I first started doing my work like this, and I felt the same. I'm not a life coach, you know. Yeah, that's something that we have to put down as far as Google business goes, or as far as Facebook business goes. You know, they categorize us, they put us in boxes. But no, we're not. We're there about helping people with relationships and learning and loving. That is a beautiful story. And you did a lot of the yoga to get. Did the yoga help you come to that realization?
Well, you know, that leads us to yet another box, which is a box of yoga. And what do we call yoga? And what does yoga look like? Because if we talk about yoga as postures, well, I didn't really start doing asana and yoga postures until I was about 24 years old. My first official influence of yoga, like yoga tradition and Eastern spiritual teachings, was probably at 14. But the real influence of the philosophy and understanding of yoga, I think, came to me from a really young age, outside of a box of yoga, before I even knew what yoga was. And, you know, I always say that for me, one of the greatest yogis that ever walked our planet was a man called Jesus. And to me, he is my greatest teacher, but I connect to him and his teachings outside of organized religion. So, you know, I always reference that and his teachings of the embodiment of love being my very first influence of yoga. So to answer your question, you know, it's like, well, how do we define yoga? Ultimately, to me, yoga is a realization of one's union with God. And it is a realization of this voice that speaks to all of us. The practice of yoga is the practice of quieting your mind. You know, it's the very second teaching of the Yoga Sutras. It's Yoga Citta Vritti Nirodha, which says that yoga is the quieting of the fluctuations of the mind. So I would have to answer, yes, absolutely. The practice of yoga definitely helped me on that journey and that path.
And I love how you've said that. That's fantastic. So when we're looking at it in that terminology, you're not wanting to be in a box, in a yoga box. Yeah, or any box, yeah, exactly. But when we turn around, if we're saying you're not in a box, but you're actually on, that is one of the stepping stones on your path or your journey. Yeah. It starts to become a little bit more in line with where you want to be or what you want to do. Yeah. So I talk about intuition. Intuition is my little thing that I do. A yoga is your thing you do, but it's only a stepping stone on that path to loving the self, or as your terminology, finding God, or being with one in that in that aspect. So what I like about my show, or what I like try to bring forward in my show, is that we all have different stepping stones that we can use. Yeah. And for you, yoga was your main stepping stone, your way of really coming in and connecting. And that's, you know, that's really amazing. So tell us a little bit more about, I want to understand the voices. So you're referring to the two types of voices. Yeah. I need to get an understanding of those two types of voices. And I want some examples of the two types of voices so people can really connect and get that understanding of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, and I know you can relate, or anybody can relate, you know, we have different words for different things. And, you know, when you talk about, or when someone talks about intuition, to me, intuition is what I refer to as the voice of the heart. And to me, the heart, think of the heart as like an antenna that is tuned to the frequency of God. That's what I believe intuition is. Intuition is a divine voice. It's a voice of spirit that guides each and every single individual. You know, we often hear people speak about all these stories about hundreds of years ago and all these spiritual texts and scriptures where God spoke or divinity spoke to humans. And I don't think God ever stopped speaking to us. I think we just stopped listening.
Yes.
And we stopped listening because the voices of our mind got so loud. So loud. But before I get on to the voice of the mind, just to clarify, I believe that the voice of the heart, or what I would call intuition, is the voice of spirit. That is the voice of God. That's the voice of divinity that guides each and every individual. Now, when I talk about the voices of the mind, the voices of the mind to me are what I call egoic voices. Now, those voices are driven by identity. And they are concerned with how I show up in the world. What is the listener right now thinking about what I am saying? How is society going to respond to what I do or what I say? What is my place in the world? Am I going to be successful? I'm going to make money. All these things that revolve around our individual identity and our individual place in the world. Anything that surrounds that is an egoic voice. It's a voice that is concerned about past. It's a voice that is concerned about the future. It is a voice that is always worried about what people think, what people say, and how we will be perceived. This is an egoic voice. Now, as I'm sure the listener can relate, every individual has these egoic voices. Call them the voices of the mind. But here's the thing, is I don't only have my egoic voices to navigate. I also have everyone else's. Because I grew up in a world, or we all grew up in a world, where society tries to tell us who we should be, how we should dress, and what box we should put ourselves into. And I'm sure we all have friends and family that try to tell us what we should do and give us advice as to what we should say, what we should do, and essentially who we should be. So they are our own voices of the mind. And then there's everyone else's voices of the mind and their perceptions of who we should be. So they're two different kinds of voices of the mind. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. So we've got our inner voices of our mind, and then we've got that external voices that is coming from someone else.
Exactly.
Or almost our beliefs that's what they want me to do or that's what they should be. Yeah, and it's exactly. Those voices. But you know what I really liked about that, Troy, before you go any further?
Yeah.
I really like the idea that you said if it's from the past, thoughts about the past or thoughts about the future, then it's of the voice of the mind. It's an egoic voice. That is really clear to get an understanding of that. Now you keep talking because I love this.
Yeah, because the voice of the mind, of course, and how I often describe it, you know, this might be getting into something completely different, but I like to talk about what I call the identity crisis of humanity. And that identity crisis is connected to the mind because it tells me that I am an individual. And it makes me separate from everything else around me. Now that's what drives the mind, right? And the mind is concerned with my preservation. It is concerned with my safety, which is why it always wants to be sure that my choices and my decisions keep me safe and meet my needs and desires. You know, we always hear about people saying, live in the present, live in the moment. But I don't often think we understand in its fullness what that means. To live in the present moment, it means that no past or future exists. It means that your mind has to be absolutely present in this moment. And funny enough is that in this moment, right now, is the only place where you can hear a voice of the heart. It's the only place where you can hear the voice of God. The voice of God, intuition, cannot speak to you in the past, and it cannot speak to you in the moment that comes next. The only time you can hear, dial into your real intuition, is in this absolute moment right now. And funny enough, that moment right now, when you're present to that moment, is when your mind is quiet.
That is lovely. Oh my goodness. How you have put that across is just amazing. I love it. Absolutely love it. Any other time, yeah, it's all happening, but you can only hear the heart when you are present and here and now, right here and now. Yeah, and that's the, and you've got to tune into it. You really have to be there. You have to be mindful of it, mindful yeah. of the heart. That does, yeah, you know what I mean. I love that. Okay, so we're going through that. So you've got an understanding of that. We've got to be mindful. We've got to be in the present to really focus on the heart voices. Right. Our voices coming from the heart, for want of another word,
or to hear it.
Yeah. And a lot of people say we've got to stop the voices in our head. But the voices in our head aren't necessarily bad. They can just take over, can't they?
Yeah, how I describe the voices of a mind is this. We always love to say that, like, the ego is bad and the mind is bad. The ego's not bad. To say the ego was bad or negative would be to call the human experience useless. And that is garbage. Because the human experience has such a profound use, right? It has a purpose. And the voices of the mind and the ego are not bad. And the mind's natural state is to create. The mind's natural state is to create thought. The mind is a beautiful thing. But how I describe a mind, I was explaining to someone, I describe your mind, think of your mind as like an eternal partner. It's an eternal marriage. And you would never come home and tell your partner to shut up, because that would not end well. So what we need to do is cultivate a relationship with our mind. We need to learn to listen to our mind and learn to understand our thoughts and emotions. Not shut it up. They're two different things, right? Your mind is one of the most powerful things in the world. It's one of the most powerful things we have access to. We don't want to shut it up. What we want to learn to do is create a relationship to it so we can actually use it consciously and not just be a puppet of our minds.
Wow. Okay. All right. Naturally, the next question is, how on earth do we do that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's if you think, and again, I try to talk, Susan, in really digestible, tangible language. So I use a lot of analogy, right? But creating a relationship with your mind is just like creating a relationship with your partner. It requires intimacy, and not romantic intimacy, emotional intimacy, right? It just requires quality time with your mind. That is spending time alone with your mind. It could be 5 minutes a day, could be 10 minutes a day, could be 60 minutes a day, could be 10 days straight, right? But it's about sitting with your mind, not with your cell phone, not with Netflix, not with a book. It's about just sitting with your mind and seeing what comes up for you. Trying to understand if these thoughts keep coming up, well, where are these thoughts coming from? If these emotions and feelings keep coming up, well, where are they coming from? Not just pushing them aside, but trying to understand. Because as long as we begin to understand and we begin to cultivate a relationship, then our mind no longer has to scream and shout to get our attention.
Right. And when you've said that, well, when you're talking about having those emotions sort of coming up, you are engaging that mind again. You're engaging that logical mind to get an understanding of it. So you're turning it, or not turning it off, you're slowing it down to allow that emotion to come through, or allow those thoughts to come through. And then you're going, okay, now engage. Let's find out. Let's get an understanding of where it is, instead of just, like you say, pushing it aside. Because we can stop, we can go into a type of meditation, allow these thoughts to come through, and then go, oh my goodness, I'm out of here. You know, I don't want, push it away. Let's stop. Yeah. But it's not. It's about still engaging the mind then to get a better understanding of it.
Think of it like, Suzanne, I don't know if you're married. But for whoever is, or anybody in a relationship, it's like the very first step of any conversation or any dialogue is listening.
Yes, yeah.
So that's the first step to creating a relationship with your mind, is listening to what comes up.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we go any further, Troy, too, I just want to let the listeners know that they can connect with you at troyhaddy.com. So how we spell your name is Troy, T-R-O-Y, which is pretty easy. But Haddy is H-A-D-E-E-D.com. So you can connect with Troy there. Now, Troy, what you're talking about to me is very much like meditation. Okay, it's what I would do is the meditation, and that's what I class it as. And I know that we can do lots of different types of meditation. And you've used yoga as one of your type of meditation as well.
Yeah.
I tend to refer to a lot of meditation as passive or active. And I see yoga, in my yoga experiences, as active in the stance that you do, in the poses that you do. But I also see it as very, very passive when we go back to at the end, and you relax and you do another meditation in that context. So I see all that happening. Can you give us a little bit more of an understanding of, so we've got the meditation, we've got that understanding of how you work with yoga, because that's your expertise as well, how you work with yoga to help this meditation come through. For the benefit of the listeners, because they may just see yoga as stretching, you know, or poses, which we often, you know, because you see these amazing poses, you'd sort of go, whoa, I won't be able to do that. But I know it's different to that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, practice of yoga has, you know, there's so many different approaches and styles of practice. And, you know, it's been kind of washed through this whole commercial filter. So people have all these different ideas of what yoga is and how yoga comes through. So what I teach is, I teach what somebody would call asana or postures. And I teach a style of asana practice called vinyasa yoga, which generally is the linking of postures together with breath, right? But even vinyasa in the world today, if you look at the majority of vinyasa yoga, it's very disconnected. It's very fast. And it looks almost aerobic, right? And I always tell people that yoga should look more like Tai Chi than it does aerobics. So when I teach or practice yoga, what I encourage people to do is, if you can imagine this, I once had a teacher say to me, I did one class with him and he said something that stuck with me forever. And he was teaching a meditation class, but I took it and I applied it to asana, vinyasa yoga. And he said to me, he said, move with so much grace that you don't disturb the air around you. And that to me is the ultimate embodiment of union or yoga, right? So what I try to get practitioners to understand is that when we step on our yoga mat, yoga is not just these postures, but it's also a space in between the postures. That space in which you come into a posture and come out of a posture, all of that is your yoga practice. If I decide to fix my clothes or scratch my head or pick my nose, all of that is my yoga practice. And the practice of yoga is about intention. You know, they say that the breath is a vehicle upon which the body and the mind merge. Right? That's one of the teachings of yoga, is that when a mind is present, is when it is focused on the breath completely. So that every movement I make is in complete synchronicity with breath. And then that breath needs to be done in a way that is intentional and intimate. So for instance, if I were to clap my hands, right? I could do this. That would be fast and disconnected. Or I can do this. And slowly and intentionally bring my hands together, right? And it is about making this practice of yoga a meditation. It is about making it a moving meditation in which that mind has to be focused. Your mind has to be concentrated on breath. Because if your mind is not concentrated on breath, then your mind is going to run to everywhere it could possibly go. So to me, the practice of asana, if practiced in a very intentional way, is mind training. It is training the mind. It is cultivating a relationship with the mind and the breath. And when we cultivate this relationship with the mind and the breath on our little yoga mat, that gives us the tools to live and embody yoga in our lives. And that's where practice really matters.
Wow. And how often would you do that? I mean, obviously you're a yoga teacher, but how often would you suggest people do that? Like start to, you know, look for a yoga studio around them or start to do this for themselves. How many times a week? How often would it take to start getting that lovely relationship with the mind?
Well, I would say every day. You know, when I'm asked that question, Susan, it kind of seems like an odd question sometimes, because to me, that's like asking me, if you have a lover and you have an eternal partner, how much days a week do you want to see them? Or how much days a week do you want to talk to them? Or for me, it's like, if you're going to pray, how much days a week are you going to pray? Well, I'm going to pray every day, you know? So I try my best, even if it is 5 minutes or 10 minutes, to get to my yoga mat every single day. If I'm lucky, most days it's 60 to 90 minutes. But even if I squeeze 5 minutes or I squeeze 10 minutes just to sit in meditation, this is in every way a daily practice.
Absolutely, I agree. But I do meditation as a daily practice, and I honestly believe that's the only way to do it. I guess I was referring to more about When you're doing yoga, like you can do yoga in your own home, obviously.
Yeah.
You could go and have a look at YouTube and get some ideas from there. But to really do it properly, to really learn how to do it properly before you can practice at home, I guess I was asking about going to a yoga studio and learning how to do it properly.
Yeah, they would. I would recommend that someone finds a yoga studio and a teacher that they connect with. And what I'm about to say, I say from a very non-judgmental place. But in the world today, not all yoga is the same.
Absolutely.
It doesn't all look the same. It's not all practiced the same. And sometimes you could walk into a yoga studio and it could be the most disconnected practice ever. So I would encourage someone to find a teacher that they connect to, find a teacher that understands the intimacy of the practice, and you'll feel it right away. You'll feel it. But the first way to do that is first to go and try out different teachers or different studios or research teachers online and see what teachers they have in your area. You know, right now online, the internet has made the world really small. So like somebody could jump on our yoga studio platform, beyondyogatv.com, and practice with me. But, you know, there is nothing like a physical teacher and being in a room with a physical teacher. So that would always be what I recommend.
Yes, I agree. I don't know, it's different. When you're working in a group, when you're working with people in a yoga studio, like you say, if you have got a good teacher, they can focus on what people are doing, what they're going through. They're really tuning in properly. And you will, like you say, you will feel that when you're working with someone. And you may need to go to a few yoga studios before you find someone that, you know, you're connecting with.
But
that's okay. That, like, you can go to one. You do not have to sign up for anything. You can go in there, have a trial run, see what it's like, and then move on from there. But when you're talking about yoga in that context, Troy, how can you tell whether you have got, now hang on, let me put it this way. I feel like I can always feel a connection with different people. So I understand that. But how can you tell? It could be a lovely person doing the yoga, but they may not be doing the right yoga for you. How do you know that? Because I know that there is different types of yoga. I can't do the hot yoga. I don't like the heat. But I know there's different types of yoga. How do you know whether the person who is actually teaching you, apart from they may have nice energy and I like them, whether they're doing it right?
Yeah, well, I would say, Sujan, first of all, like, there also are different kinds of hot yoga. Like, our yoga studio is heated, but it's more like warm heated than hot heated. So I also would encourage people not to put hot yoga as a big umbrella as a certain type of yoga. It really isn't. There's yoga in a warm room and yoga in a hot room, and then there's Bikram yoga, which in itself is a certain style of yoga, which people often call hot yoga. What I would say to answer your question is that I would invite the practitioner to look at how it makes them feel. Because if your intention to do yoga is to lose weight or get a workout or sweat or do a handstand, then you're going to look for a certain type of yoga and connect a certain type of class. If your intention to practice yoga is to quiet your mind and deepen your relationship to your breath and come to a space of get a glimmer of peace and tranquility, well, then you have to look at how you feel when you step in a room to practice with a teacher. Does this style of yoga give you a little bit of that, even if just for a moment? Or does it just make you feel that you're doing exercise and gets you more anxious than anything else? So it's really about the practitioner to understand What is my why? What is my why, and how am I actually feeling? How does this make me feel?
Oh, that's great. Thank you for that. It's a lovely explanation of it too, because I know that, I mean, I'm not in a really big city, but I know that there's lots of places that you can do these different things. And one of the reasons why people don't go and do this is because of not knowing. But when you base it that way by going, okay, what's the why? You know, did you want to learn how to be more flexible? Did you want to connect with your mind? Did you want to do more of that softer style? Did you want to use the heat to allow you to lose weight, or, you know, the different aspects of it? It starts to make sense. You start to get an understanding of what you're looking for and what, whether it's resonating with you or not.
Yeah, and I'll also say this, Susan, like, you know, I've been teaching a long time now, and when I was just started teaching, you know, you go through different phases of development as a teacher, as you do as an adult and a human being. And it's very easy to fall into these perceptions of what is yoga and what is not yoga and what is right yoga and what is wrong yoga. And the reality is that there are a lot of styles of yoga that have strayed from the fundamental essence of what the teaching of yoga really represents. But that doesn't make them bad.
Yeah.
Because the different styles of yoga that meet people at different stages of their development. And I always say, like, if somebody wanted to come in my yoga class to lose weight, or to find a date, like, there's no wrong reason for you to step in my room. You step in my room for whatever reason gets you there. And if somebody is first experience of yoga, if they are called to a yoga that gives them six-pack abs or teach them how to a handstand or sweat or whatever it is, maybe that's their hook. That's their bait that just gets them into a room and will eventually expose them to a different avenue and understanding of what a yoga practice is. It's like just a stepping stone along their journey.
Yeah. Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. What a great way to look at it too. And it keeps you open-minded and allows them to be open-minded too.
Absolutely.
I love that. Well, have you got any more little tidbits for us before we say goodbye?
I would say that if anybody would like to practice with me online, we do have our online platform called beyondyogatv.com. And I also do one-on-one and private sessions. So if anybody would love to work with me one-on-one, I would be more than happy to honor their journey. And if they mention your podcast, Susan, they will get 15% off.
Oh, lovely. Thank you so much. That's the Voice of Intuition podcast. So, Troy, when you say work one-on-one, you do that through video?
Yeah, through video online.
Wow.
Yeah, so I can do that as well. And, you know, it's funny, like working one-on-one online, you know, sometimes people say, well, it's not the same as working one-on-one in person. But working one-on-one online sometimes even has more benefits.
Yes,
because I can sit here and look at you, Susan, without being very awkward.
Yes.
Whereas if me and you were in the same room and I sat and I looked at your physical body and your posture, it could make someone very uncomfortable. So online gives me the ability to do that and really speak to someone's body without making them uncomfortable as well. So, you know, there are pros and cons.
But the benefit is that you can do it anywhere in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're from Trinidad, you're in Trinidad, so it's like, whoa, it just opens everything up.
Yeah. And one tip I would also leave with listeners is this. And to go into depth of this, we might need another hour. But I will just leave them with this. Your mind is the most powerful thing you have. You know, there's a teaching of yoga says the mind is king of everything. but breath is king of your mind. And your mind is the most powerful thing you have, but your breath is the one thing that can tame your mind.
Wow, that's lovely. Yeah. Oh, and yeah, when you start thinking about it, it's wow, very deep. Thank you very much for that, Troy. That's beautiful.
Thank you for having me, Susan. It's been an absolute pleasure.
I really enjoy how I have a lot of guests on, and I love to go deep in little areas, and you've done that really nicely in understanding the difference between the heart voice and the mind voice, and then the difference in the mind voices from external chatter to internal chatter. So yeah. I really love how you've done that. I feel that the people listening will get a really clear understanding of what it is and how they can actually go forward and start doing meditation, start doing yoga, start looking at different ones. Can you just repeat to me one more time before I say goodbye? What is your YouTube? Was it your YouTube channel? Because I should have put it up on the ticker tape. Your YouTube.
I do have a YouTube channel. I am also more active on Instagram.
Yeah.
Right. I have Instagram. I do have a YouTube channel. I'm trying to build more of, but they can find a lot of my stuff on YouTube if they look my name up. I do have a channel, and on my website as well, SusanTroyHaddy.com.
Yes.
There's a page that lists all my podcasts and interviews. And this one will also be listed on that page. So if anybody wants to go and have a listen again or listen to all these different insights, they can. Yeah. But the channel I was pointing towards, the website, is one called BeyondYogaTV.com. And that has a class library, and that is a platform on which we take all our yoga classes from Trinidad in our studio live. So they can find a lot of my content there as well.
Yeah, that's what it is. BeyondYogaTV.com.
Yeah.
Okay. BeyondYogaTV.com. Yeah. Sorry. I thought it was YouTube when you said TV.
Yeah.
But no, that's a website you can go to. Thank you so much, Troy, for being on the show. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Subhan. And thanks for everyone for listening. It's been a pleasure and an honor. Love. You guys have a beautiful day.
Yeah. Now stay there because I need to chat with you in a minute. But I will just do my final little bits. That was really good. Check out the website, so TroyHaddy.com, and have a look at that and see what's going on there. I didn't have time. We had the electrician here. That was some of the noises you might have heard in the background. I didn't have time to pop onto the website and check it out, so I'm going to do that after. But please subscribe, like, share the podcast, because that's how we're going to get out there. Which is really about me, not about you. No, share, subscribe, like the podcast so everyone can enjoy the beautiful guests we have on the show. But that's me for tonight. I will say bye for now, and I will see you next week. Okay, bye for now.